Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. This is the Anesthesia Learn on the Go podcast series from the University of Kentucky Department of Anesthesiology. In these episodes, we will provide a high-yield clinical review of some of the common topics encountered by anesthesiologists at all levels. The following episode will be recorded by a member of our department at UK.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at UK Anesthesia and subscribe to the University of Kentucky Department of Anesthesiology YouTube channel for our video cast. Now fire up your headphones, relax, and let's talk anesthesia.
Hello. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Eric Wetherington, and I'm a fourth-year anesthesiology resident. And in this podcast, I will be talking about a new medication called remimazolam. I have no financial or other disclosures to discuss. I was introduced to remimazolam during my elective month in Pikeville, Kentucky this year, and I wanted to share with you what I've learned about this medication and how it could be used in our clinical practice. So let's get right into it. Remimazolam is a short-acting benzodiazepine that is relatively new to anesthesia. It was approved for procedural sedation and general anesthesia in 2019 and 2020 in various countries, including the United States. Now, one of the first things that you may notice about the name of this medication is the Remi prefix, which likely makes you think of remifentanyl. However, remifentanyl is an opioid, whereas remimazolam is a benzodiazepine. Much like midazolam, remimazolam is a GABA A receptor agonist that causes neural activity inhibition, leading to anxiolysis and sedation at various plasma concentrations. However, unlike midazolam, remimazolam is very short acting. And much like remifentanyl, remimazolam undergoes rapid hydrolysis via nonspecific tissue esterases, which allows for rapid onset and rapid offset. Therefore, remimazolam has a short elimination half-life, a short context-sensitive half-life, and a small volume of distribution, and overall giving it a predictable and safe drug profile. As an added bonus, remimazolam can be reversed using flumazenil, just like with other benzodiazepines. So as far as pharmacology goes, as I've already mentioned, remimazolam is a GABA-A receptor agonist, much like midazolam and also etomidate. And just for review purposes, propofol is a GABA-B receptor agonist. GABA receptor agonists work by inducing a conformational change in the chloride ion channel, causing cell hyperpolarization via chloride ion influx. This causes neural activity inhibition, predominantly in the amygdala and reticular activating system. Remimazolam is metabolized via first-order kinetics, which means that drug elimination is proportional to plasma concentration. And the opposite is true for zero-order kinetics, in which plasma concentration has no effect on the rate of elimination. Midazolam also is metabolized via first-order kinetics, but its rate of elimination is approximately 3 times longer than remimazolam. And like I said before, remimazolam is metabolized by tissue esterases, specifically liver carboxyl esterase, into its inactive metabolite called CNS-7054, which has a 300-fold lower affinity for the GABA receptor, and it's ultimately excreted in the urine. So now that we know a little bit about remimazolam, how it works, and how it's metabolized, let's talk about clinical applications. As I mentioned before, remimazolam was approved in 2019 and 2020 for procedural applications as well as general anesthesia. Remimazolam can be used for procedural sedation such as nerve blocks, epidural placement, line placement like central lines and arterial lines, GI endoscopy such as colonoscopies, EGDs, etc., and also bronchoscopies. In endoscopy, remimazolam has the potential to be a good anesthetic because it offers short-term sedation and quick room turnover times, as well as fast recovery in the PACU with good safety profile. It has lower rates of hypotension and respiratory depression when compared to propofol, which I'll get into in a little bit. In general anesthesia, remimazolam can be used as both an induction and maintenance anesthetic in TEVA applications when combined with remifentanil to replace the need for anesthetic gases. In one study that I found in cardiac cases that used remimazolam for induction and maintenance prior to going on bypass, less vasopressors were actually needed when compared to using propofol as the induction agent and anesthetic gas for maintenance. Now, what about intensive care applications? So remimazolam has not been approved yet for sedation in the ICU. However, clinical trials are ongoing and the future is optimistic. As I mentioned before, remimazolam is organ as well as age and weight independent when it comes to metabolism, making it a great sedation choice for critically ill patients with hepatic and renal complications, as well as elderly patients. It's quickly eliminated and it's hemodynamically stable, and I think remimazolam could definitely find its own place in the ICU for sedation in the future. So what about dosing? Just like with most of the anesthetics that we use, it's recommended that remimazolam be titrated to the level of sedation desired for the individual patient. For procedural sedation, 0.05 to 0.075 milligrams per kilogram is considered to be a safe and effective starting bolus dose. To keep things simple, though, I think it's most commonly given by starting with 2.5 to 5 milligrams IV over about a minute, followed by 2.5 milligrams IV every 2 to 3 minutes thereafter in order to achieve desired effects. For general anesthesia, the recommended induction dose is actually an infusion rate of 6 to 12 milligrams per kilogram per hour IV, and then a maintenance rate of 1 milligram per kilogram per hour thereafter. I don't think a bolus induction dose has been approved for general anesthesia, and that's why the induction dose is quoted in an infusion form, but I don't know that for sure. And while we're on the topic of dosing, let's quickly talk about reversal with flumazenil. I've never actually given a patient flumazenil, so I thought it might be beneficial to mention that the dose of flumazenil is 0.2 milligrams IV, followed by repeated doses every minute up to a total of 1 milligram. Flumazenil has a short terminal half-life of 40 to 80 minutes, so sometimes sedation can reoccur once the flumazenil wears off, and in which case the dose of flumazenil would need to be repeated, and obviously the patient would need to be monitored closely in the pre-op or PACU. So how does remimazolam compare to some of the more common anesthetics that we use? As far as hemodynamics, as I mentioned earlier, remimazolam has been shown to cause less hypotension than propofol. It's also been shown to cause less bradycardia than dexmedetomidine. Remimazolam causes less respiratory depression than propofol, and it causes less pain at the injection site compared to propofol and etomidate. Remimazolam comes with little risk of adrenal suppression compared to etomidate, which is an added bonus for the critically ill patient population. So let's talk about the comparisons I've mentioned in terms of onset time. I've mentioned a lot about how it's quick on and quick off and fast eliminations and whatnot. So how does it compare? Remimazolam's onset time is roughly 1 to 3 minutes after an IV bolus, and it has about a 7 to 8 minute recovery time. Propofol works in about 10 to 60 seconds on average after an IV bolus, has about a 10 minute recovery time. So basically, propofol works a little bit faster and has about the same recovery time as remimazolam when given in the IV bolus fashion. When I read this, I thought, well, in let's say endoscopy, there really doesn't seem to be a clear advantage in terms of the timing of things between remimazolam over propofol. But as I mentioned before, remimazolam has been shown to cause some less hypotension than propofol. So I guess you could say that remimazolam could potentially be a little bit safer, say, in the recovery PACU stay, but it's hard to say. And just for comparison, midazolam has a 3 to 5 minute onset on average and a much longer recovery, as we all know. So remimazolam works quicker than midazolam and is soon to be eliminated as well. Very quick offset. Let's talk about addiction potential. So remimazolam is comparable to midazolam in that it has little addiction potential when it's given IV. Remimazolam has a poor oral bioavailability, something that I'll mention here shortly. And then what about delirium? So I couldn't find studies that have specifically addressed the delirium risk with remimazolam. And I think this is definitely an area that needs to be investigated further moving forward. But I would imagine that since it's eliminated so quickly, that its risk of delirium is actually quite low, but I don't know that for sure. So what are some of the downsides of remimazolam? The most common adverse effects that I read about in the literature were headache, somnolence, and involuntary movements. So obviously involuntary movements would be, could pose a potential problem during procedures. We want our patients to be still. Increased cost is an issue, of course, just like any drug that's new to the market. And one thing I thought of is, like I mentioned before, if it offers little to no advantage when over propofol in terms of, let's say, room turnover times and PACU length of stay, say in the endoscopy example that I gave earlier, then why would we use remimazolam instead of propofol? So anesthesia providers have been using propofol for these applications for many, many years now, and we've all become very comfortable with propofol. So why would we make the switch to remimazolam, especially if it costs more? That doesn't quite make any sense, but it does seem to be a little bit more hemodynamically stable with less hypotension and respiratory depression, so that might actually give it a little bit of an advantage, but definitely something to keep in mind. Another downside of remimazolam is that although it's water soluble, it does begin to precipitate out of solution at pHs that are greater than 4, which I thought was pretty remarkable. That's not anywhere close to physiological pH. But the more I read, the more I saw that this really comes into play when it's reconstituted or pushed to the patient with lactated ringers or plasmolite. Lactated ringers has a pH of 6.5 and plasmolite has a pH of 7.4. In order to get around this problem, it's recommended that normal saline be used to reconstitute remimazolam, as that it has a pH of 5.5, so a little bit closer to that pH of 4 that is referenced in the literature. Remimazolam has not been approved for pediatrics. This is kind of a big downside. Obviously, we use midazolam quite often in the pediatric population, whether it's IV or PO. And as I mentioned before, remimazolam does not have a great bioavailability when it's given PO. But it has been shown to be beneficial when it's given intranasally. So if it does get approved for pediatric use, I could see it being potentially beneficial when given intranasally in some situations where you need to get IV access, but you need a little bit of sedation in order to achieve that. So to wrap things up here, remimazolam is a short-acting anesthetic with rapid on and rapid off properties. It has an organ-independent metabolism, stable hemodynamics, and predictable duration of action that make it useful in a wide array of clinical applications. I think remimazolam is certainly a medication to keep on all of our radars. Just like with any new medication, remimazolam needs to be closely looked at in many more clinical trials in order to be adopted into our everyday clinical practice. However, I do think that we will begin to see and hear about this medication more often in the future, and I am very happy to have had this opportunity to share what I've learned about remimazolam with you. Final side note, something to remember and think about moving forward is that per ASA guidelines, providers with specialized training in airway management, i.e. anesthesia and emergency medicine, must be present when propofol is administered. So I was thinking about this and I thought I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see more proceduralists, like say in-office sedation or even GI examples, using remimazolam as a propofol substitute in order to bypass this ASA guideline and others like it, thereby not quote-unquote needing anesthesia for their sedation for their procedure. I'm not sure if this would exactly hold up I guess you'd say the practice of these specialties necessarily, or you know, the various regulations out there, but I just thought it was something interesting that I came across and it made me think about this. So thank you for listening to my podcast. I really appreciate everybody, and I hope you have a great day. Thank you.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this podcast.
If you have ideas for future podcasts, please reach out to us via email at learnonthego@uky.edu. Don't forget to follow us on our social media accounts as well, on Instagram and Twitter, UK Anesthesia. From all of us at UK Department of Anesthesiology, have a great day.